listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax, this is Topfop. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching.
Will, in terms of rock songs, where do you rank Eye of the Tiger? Survivor's Eye of the Tiger from the Rocky III soundtrack.
I understand the song. Yep. Thank you for clarifying. Okay. Eye of the Tiger. But like, it would have been a tough starting point if I didn't know what the song Eye of the Tiger was. If I was not aware of the song Eye of the Tiger, I would say to your question, where does it rank in the greatest rock songs of all time? Quite low if I had not heard of it. But I have. I'm familiar with the song. What's your different, like when you say greatest rock songs of all time, what's your definition? Well, what are parameters?
I guess the question is, so I'll give you some context. So Iona occasionally likes to get her face painted before we drop her off at daycare, and today she wanted to be a tiger. And so when we got into the car, she was like, I want a song.
She started that, of course, January 6th, wasn't it?
When she started yeah, doing it. She wanted to go as the Viking. She wanted the Viking helmet. I was like, no.
She said, it's time to storm the princess castle, Daddy. Yeah.
The macadamia castle. She was like, those monarchs have had it too good for too long. After the coronation where they coronated the new macadamia king.
It was time. Where we all had to pledge our allegiance to the macadamia king.
No, she wanted to hear a song about tigers. And on the hop, the only song I could think of with tiger was Eye of the Tiger. And so I put it on, and like my memory of that, it's so intrinsically linked with Rocky III. You know, it's the opening montage of Rocky III, which is for context. So Rocky I, Rocky, you know, has a 1 in a million shot to take on Apollo Creed. Doesn't win, but, you know, wins pride. Rocky II, he gets a rematch and he actually becomes a champion. So at the start of Rocky III, the montage you see is Rocky just riding high. He's knocking out chumps left, right, and center. He's appearing on the Muppet Show. He's riding a motorbike. And I think this is also maybe the first or second of the Rocky films that Sly directed. And there's a real vanity project feel to it. There's a lot of kind of slow-mo and muscles and all this kind of stuff going on.
It was basically his Instagram reels before there was Instagram
100%,
reels.
You know, and there is this, like, coincidentally, I don't know, I mean, maybe this is all linked, but I found this whole subculture of like Sly Stallone fan pages on Instagram that are really like oddly specific. Like, for instance, he did this arm wrestling movie called Over the Top, where he plays a truck driver called Lincoln Hawk. You know, who's estranged from his son and he's trying to win enough money in underground arm wrestling competitions, or maybe they're legit arm wrestling competitions. I don't know.
I mean, what's more likely? There is a bunch of legit arm wrestling competitions or there's an underground arm wrestling league.
And so he's trying to win those to win his son back or to prove he can take custody of his son. Anyway, I found this like Instagram page that was like it's something like at Lincoln Hawk love or at Lincoln Hawk fan or something. And I'm like, what is this? And it's all these stills and behind the scenes shots from the vastly forgotten action film Over the Top. But then that linked me to all these. And they all come from like the Eastern sort of, it's like Eastern Europe. You know how they sort of say there's certain stars who still have a lot of cachet in Eastern Europe, and it's like stars like Arne. It's all the strong men of the kind of 80s and stuff like that. That's where that's where all this kind of attention flows. But what was I talking about? Eye of the Tiger.
Over the Top, like there's all these fan pages. Just before we get back to what you wanted to talk about, Eye of the Tiger, little side note.
Yeah.
Because famously I have one bicep that is much bigger than the other bicep. And do you think, because I think about this in terms of what Sly was trying to achieve with Over the Top, right? Because like you said, vanity projects, it's the dumbest of all ideas, but it's not a dumb idea if the whole point of your movie is to show off how good your biceps are, right? That's what an arm wrestling movie is great for. Like if you feel like you've got a really good arm, a really good bicep, that's really all you need for an arm wrestling movie. You don't even need the rest of your body to be that good. You just need one super arm. Do you think, like, clearly I couldn't get fit enough to compete in any other,
you've got bad
hips, all these sort of things.
Yeah.
But could I, if I just concentrated on working out that one arm?
Yeah.
Like, it's already got a head start. Yeah. If I, instead of leaning away from
this
that,
this is the arm that Pornhub built.
That's right. Just went into a Rocky-style montage of training my one arm to get this giant arm to enter underground arm wrestling competition.
Time to click on that step siblings tab, I guess. yeah, I think so. I mean, why not? Like, legit, I mean, look, I don't want to disparage professional arm wrestlers, but legit Olympic sports like javelin and shot put and stuff, I imagine they're all very biased to one limb, right?
Yeah, but they still need, like, I mean, to throw a javelin or a shot put, you still need, like, great legs, like hips, like there's rotations, there's all those sort of things. Whereas for your arm wrestling, literally the rest of your body's just got to act as ballast, right? Like, I've just got to be able to, like, if I could just lump the rest of my body at the table,
yeah,
and then I have, like, one good arm, one, like,
okay,
just disproportionately big arm.
So just say you, like, why don't we funnel whatever funds you have, like, let's sell all your, you know, the properties you own, you take all your savings, whatever assets you own, and we're just going to channel it into an accelerated training program. We're going to hire the best sports scientists, the best personal trainers, weight trainers, biomechanics experts, and they're all going to focus just on your arm.
Yeah. They're all going to say, this is ridiculous.
We'll take the money. We're kind of curious to see how this pans out, but this is absolutely ridiculous. But do you, yeah, I wonder, like, how long it would take. I mean, clearly the first thing you need to start on is just, like, it'd be strength and conditioning, right? Like, you just, that was the first thing you need to do. So you're doing curls every day, you're doing whatever the tricep exercises are. I wonder if nutrition would play a part in that. I mean, can you still be eating, like, Doritos and stuff, but just have an awesome, just, like, jacked arm?
Yeah, I reckon, in fact, I think that would be part of the advice, right? Because the more weight you have in the rest of your body to counterbalance.
That's right, you're anchoring
this super good arm. So basically, I think you would have to be, like, carbo loading. Like, you'd be doing basically the Chris Hemsworth Thor diet, but only working out one arm and hoping that all, like, the energy and all, like, the protein and everything was just going into this one arm.
I think surely it could work. Maybe we get some of that kind of EMS training, you know, the electric shock thing. So even while you're sleeping, like, we get your muscles twitching at night. So you're constantly working on that one arm. But I wonder if, like, would you need cardio? Because, I mean, I know it's like a strength sport, but, like, if it's an endurance test. Like, if you come up against another dude, you know, who's kind of equally as strong as you, and you're sort of locked into, you're going to need something, some other kind of fitness, right? You can't just rely on the weight, the counterbalance weight of Doritos.
I mean, do you think, though, you would get, like, some amount of fitness just generally from working out one arm? Like, is there a overall cardio benefit? Because it's not like, I mean, your heart's still pumping and all the things you would be doing to work out that arm.
Are you doing one arm push-ups? Because that engages the rest of your body.
Interesting. Yeah, probably. Like, I mean, like, it's not like you can entirely just work out the arm.
No, you can.
Like,
there's going to be absolutely, you can just work out the arm. There's a whole series of exercises we could do which would just isolate your biceps and triceps and forearm, and even your hand and wrist we'd work on doing some, like, wrist mobility exercises. Like, I do a full, like, 2-minute wrist circuit before I do any kind of weights, just to kind of get that all going. So I reckon we could just focus on your arm.
Okay. Well, in that case, no, I'm not doing one arm push-ups then. If we feel like we can just isolate it to one arm, let's just concentrate on the arm.
How do you think, how much of a lead in do we think before we enter you into your first competition?
I mean, you'd want to, like, I would have thought if I'm going into full-time training on one arm, well, I mean, how full-time does it need to be?
How much can you work out?
Yeah, well, okay, that's fine.
No, but not just physical, but you're studying tapes and stuff as well. You've got, like, former world champions. We've hired, like, you know, the guy who wrote Over the Top to come in and be like a consultant in your training, all that kind of stuff.
This feels like too much to me. Like, I feel like I just want to concentrate on working out my super arm. I don't want to like know anything about the tactics. I don't want to be like, nah, I just want to have like that's tactics time is time I could be spent working out my super arm. So I feel like it's just got to be, if you say it's 10 hours a day, because like you can still do other things. I could be working out my super arm right now while we're podcasting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One of those like particularly if I'm doing, like you said, recoveries or like anything that's electronic or whatever, I could have like my super arm like in an ice bath at the moment while we were podcasting with each other. So I could multitask. It's just one arm. I've got a whole other, like I could use my left arm for every day around the house chores because this is now my wrestling arm, right? Like I've got to protect it like for the matches.
100%.
Do you think, here's what I will say.
I think maybe that, I also think protect it, but I also think you need to toughen it up like a kickboxer. You've got to be outside just whacking the side of a tree with your forearm just to build up the kind of like, you know, the skin and the muscle, the tissue on the outside.
I agree with that. I think there would have to be some roughening of my skin. Like, you know, I'd need to, my hands are quite soft at the moment, which I think
too much,
would like.
Too much pushing pencils, Will.
Although maybe that's a competitive advantage. Like maybe that first time that you slap together with the other guy in the arm wrestling ring and he feels your soft, soft
He's
hands,
like,
he thinks, oh, hang on.
Yeah.
And maybe that's my thing is like I disguise my giant arm. So like I come in and you see me from one side, like I've got a real two-faced thing going on. And so you see me from one side and you see my like my normal like weak left arm and you're like, oh my God, like I'm going to absolutely beat this guy. Like it, like this is going to be the easiest arm wrestling race I've ever done in my life. And then I turn around.
This giant like
and I reveal the super arm, this giant arm.
It would be kind of psychologically intimidating because if I was your opponent, I would be like, this dude is insane. Like who would dedicate their life to just – I mean, obviously, he's focused his entire, he's probably sold everything he has and hired every expert in the world.
And put it into this.
Yeah. Can we make
this one thing?
Can we make a reality series at the same time, like a Welcome to Wrexham type thing about like, you know, the will
one
to
man's
win?
One quest to become
the will
the
to
greatest,
win.
even over the topper.
Yeah. Which, again, sounds like another category on Pornhub. I've got to be honest with you. I don't want to be an over-the-topper. I think we need to because we'll need to make some money back because I don't think there's a huge amount of money in arm wrestling, professional arm wrestling.
No, but then I'd take on challenges for cash.
Like charity or no cash? Right.
No, I mean, this is how we make some money out of it. Okay. Like, I'm at like county fairs and places like that where you can come and try your luck against, you know, the – like, so, you know, I think that's what I would end up doing. I'd end up on the carny circuit.
Right. So what was I talking about? Eye of the Tiger. So
Eye of the Tiger.
Okay. So the montage, that's where Eye of the Tiger kicks in. And I think for any kid of our generation, it was a real like, you know, you hear those dun, 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 and it's motivating. Like it's kind of it just gets your energy going. It's kind of like it was new metal before new metal. You know how you said that new metal is perfectly designed for kind of like wrestling promos? That's like Eye of the Tiger. But then I was like, is it just because of my fondness for Rocky in that montage? Like when if I listen to this song in isolation, is it actually a good song? Or is it just because it's attached to a very popular film franchise and is deployed masterfully in a very exciting montage sequence? Because I don't know. I was listening to it and I'm like, it's got a great kind of that dun 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 dun, dun whatever you call that, like a riff. And the that's all cool. But then when it gets into the song, there's like keyboards and it gets all soft rocky and no pun intended.
But I also think like what you're saying is that there is an element of it that driving beat that you're talking about at the start, it still has a bit of that disco flavor almost underneath it for a rock song, right?
Yeah.
Like particularly
the percussion
in the,
is very disco.
Da, da, da,
yeah.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Like if that was in like Saturday Night Live or something, with John Travolta walking down the street, you'd be like, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense as well. Do I think that the riffs are strong enough that it would be an iconic song outside people knowing it from Rocky? Yes, because I think it was. Like I think there were people who enjoyed that song and that was like a big rock song. And it's certainly like you've seen it used as a motivational song. I guess it's association with motivation, like, you know, in clips of, you know, sporting highlights and things like that, that it might be used, probably does come from its association with Rocky, though. Like, the reason that you'll see a basketball montage or a football montage or any of those sort of things over that song is because probably the person who put that montage together grew up watching Rocky and thought it would look cool.
But it became the unofficial anthem for Rocky. They used it again in Rocky IV, like that famous kind of, like, it's not a graphic, I guess, but you see the Russian glove and the American glove come together and explode at the opening of Rocky IV, and they're playing Eye of the Tiger. So, because the Rocky theme in itself is a real, like, you know, uplifting, inspirational, motivating song. That's more of your orchestral, you know, going to fly now. But then you got the rock version. But because Iona, I was watching her listening to it, because I'm like, it's not really a song about tigers. They mention the Eye of a Tiger. And it's really just about a guy, you know, getting his will to live back. He's back on the street. He's, you know, he's got the skills, got the glory, blah, blah, blah. But Iona was, like, enjoying it. I could see her. She does this thing now when she listens to music where she actually starts to move to the beat. And I could see her nodding. And then we got into daycare, you know, we stopped the song. And I said, did you like that? And she's like, yeah. And I said, do you have the Eye of the Tiger? And she looked at me and she was like, rah! And I was like, oh, my God. It actually, like, it works. The message of the song is to be the best.
It inspired her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got to have the Eye of the Tiger. Do you want some facts about the song Eye of the Tiger?
Yeah, I would absolutely love some facts about the song Eye of the Tiger.
All right. So the band was Survivor. It was released as a single from their third album of the same name. It was also the theme song in the film Rocky III. Theme song, does that count? Okay. Which was released the day before the single. Okay, so definitely the film is kind of how people – it wasn't like they took a popular song and put it in the film. It was the film and the song happened simultaneously. It was recorded at the request of Rocky III star Sylvester Stallone after Queen denied him permission to use Another One Bites the Dust. That was the original song Stallone intended to use as the Rocky III theme. You can sort of hear
it's Eye of the Tiger. You can do a mashup of those two very easily. Hang on, we've got a lawsuit. Call Ed Sheeran. He might be able to give us some advice.
The version of the song that appears in Rocky III is a demo version of the song. The film version also contained tiger growls, which does not appear on the album version. And it features the original Survivor singer Dave Bickler on lead vocals. The song is also the title song to the 1986 film of the same name, Eye of the Tiger. Okay, I didn't even know there was a film. It gained tremendous MTV and radio airplay and it topped the charts in 1982. In the United States, it held the number one spot on the Billboard 100. Okay, so I think regardless of what you think of this song, it's an undeniable hit, right? You don't get to number one in the States without being huge.
This is a hit song and it's endured. That's the other thing about it. Like, I mean, I don't think there's, but classic rocks never stop playing Eye of the Tiger.
Stayed there for six consecutive weeks and it's the band's only song to reach the top of the charts. And was the number two single of 1982 behind.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, give me some Charlie Clawson style clues here.
An Australian artist, believe it or not.
Oh, an Australian artist in 1982, Men at Work.
No, a female artist.
Olivia Newton-John.
And the song was very much of the same theme, the same kind of era.
Yeah, so Xanadu?
No, more of a, like, think about what Rocky, that montage in Rocky, what that's celebrating. It's all about, like,
let's get physical.
Physical. I guess in 1982, people really wanted messages about health. Okay. It spent 15 consecutive weeks in the top 10, the second longest run of 1982, behind another song by an 80s artist. Okay, I'll give you a Clawson-style clue. if I was going to send a cantaloupe...
If you were going to send a cantaloupe.
If I was going to send a cantaloupe away for the summer, I might send it to this place.
John Cougar Mellencamp.
I didn't even get to my big cat clue. You nailed it. That's right. Hurt So Good by John Cougar Mellencamp. This top 10 run is tied with the aforementioned Another One Bites the Dust, as well as Physical, as the longest run in the top 10 for a number one song during the 1980s decade. That's got to make Sly feel good, right? So Queen said to him, get stuffed. And so it's like, well, I'll just get another band to write a Queen song, and that will become the second highest charting song of the 80s besides Another One Bites the Dust.
I mean,
that's amazing. Sly was at the peak of his powers, right?
It must have been amazing, really, because the one thing that we know, I mean, look, he's been super successful, and look, he's got his absolute talents, right? Like, as both an actor and a director and, like, you know, all these sort of things. He's got talents.
Well, especially considering what he is. Like, when you think of the unlikeliness of him when he started his career becoming...
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like the Italian stallion, the soft porn actor,
yeah,
who can barely talk.
Yeah.
Who, like, just... It's so unlikely that he was such a cultural, like a huge cultural influence, both in the movies that he was making, like, and how reflective they were of the era,
and but
the
fact that it had a cultural,
but also had a cultural footprint that was outside the movies, and is still, I mean, this story, the one we're talking about, they're still making movies based on this myth, this story, like it's still happening today.
Yeah. The band won an award for Best Rock Performance or Rock Duo at the Grammy Awards. Okay, so it's award-winning as well as chart-topping. And in September 1982, it also peaked at number one in the United Kingdom and stayed at the top of the UK charts for four consecutive weeks. It was certified platinum in 1982, signifying 2 million sales of the vinyl copies of the song, and it has sold over 4.1 million digital downloads in the United States by February 2015. And it was voted VH1's 63rd greatest hard rock song. See, that was,
there you go.
I don't dispute it's great, but I dispute whether it's hard rock. I think it's actually quite soft. I think it's soft rock. Or does the soft rock have to be love songs?
It you could find it in both of those lists. I think it's probably the chorus that takes it into a bit of like a hard, like what they consider hard rock. Like if it was all just like the verse, then I think it would be a soft rock song.
I think it's the opening is what makes it hard rock. It's the dun 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 dun, and then when it gets into the vocals, you like it's got that disco kind of, and then the really high kind of lead vocals, and it's not really. It's the Eye of the Tiger. It's the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of our rivals. I guess it's got kind of hard rock implications. It's not about love or anything like that. Co-writer John Petterick explained the song's title. At first, we wondered if calling it Eye of the Tiger was too obvious. The initial draft of the song, we started with, it's the eye of the tiger, it's the thrill of the fight, rising up to the spirit of our rival, and the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night, and it all comes down to survival. We were going to call the song Survival. The band Survivor.
Survivor.
We're going to call the song.
Song Survival by Survivor.
In the rhyme scheme, you can tell we had set up Rival to rhyme with Survival. At the end of the day, we said, are we nuts? That hook is so strong, and Rival doesn't have to be perfectly rhymed with Tiger. So we made the right choice and went with Eye of the Tiger. Yes. Absolutely. You shouldn't, if your band is called Survivor, don't release a song called Survival.
Yeah, although, I don't think we would be having a conversation right now about, do you remember that song Survival by Survivor?
Well, it's weird though, is that because didn't Destiny's Child, they sampled Eye of the Tiger in one of their songs, didn't they? Dun, 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 dun. Michelle, can you handle this? Beyonce, can you handle this? What's that song? I don't think you're ready for this jelly. isn't that Eye of the Tiger at the start?
Because your body's too
bootylicious.
Bootylicious.
Is that what the song's called?
How could we have forgotten the bootylicious era?
More accolades for the song. It was nominated for the 1982 Academy Award for Best Original Song, but lost to. This is a very much a soft rock song. It's a duet,
mm-hmm.
Parodied in The Simpsons. The movie was parodied in The Simpsons. It is the title offers.
Thank you for really narrowing it down by saying it was something that was parodied in The Simpsons.
Well, it's been parodied a lot. There's a final scene of the film is quite famous. The title of the film is an inherent contradiction. Oh, no, it's not a contradiction. It's a duality, not a contradiction.
A duality.
A duality of man. He can be both a blank and a blank.
Man can be both a.
All right. How about I give you a clue to this song?
That's better.
Okay. So the opposite of this would hate would keep us down below. Where
love
we
will lift us up where we belong. Okay, sure. All right. Well, you could have just told me what the song was called based on that clue.
I want to hear the song Hate Leaves Us Down Below Where We Don't Want to Be, where we don't belong.
Absolutely do not belong, where we're trespassing. Hate Leaves Us Down Below Where We Trespass.
What film's that from?
I don't know what it film is.
The duality of man.
Yeah.
If I was to say to you, what are you doing here? Because I've got nowhere else to go. What film's that from? If I said Gerbil.
If I mentioned Richard Gere.
Yes, correct. Just awful, isn't it, that urban myth. Like, I only have to say Gerbil and you immediately, like Richard Gere.
Yeah, I can't remember. An officer and a gentleman.
An officer and a gentleman. Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen An Officer and a Gentleman. I don't. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, it's good. It's a good film. And, you know, it's an old school 80s romance. Apparently, they hated each other.
Is the officer and the gentleman both the same guy? Is that both Richard Gere?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he the officer and the gentleman?
He's the officer and the gentleman. He's a screw up. He's a kid from the wrong side of the tracks who joins the army and reaches the rank of officer and gets the girl. So he's both an officer and a gentleman.
Sounds great.
You would love it.
I can't believe I've never watched it.
So they won Best Rock Performance at the Grammy Awards, but so it was nominated for Song of the Year, but lost to Willie Nelson. Okay, lawsuits. All right, here we go. There's been quite a few lawsuits, mainly to do with Republicans, which is strange. So in 2000,
is this people who use it as their theme song? Yes,
yeah.
Right, okay.
So in 2012, Survivor sued Republican presidential candidate Newt Gingrich in Illinois federal court for using the song without authorization as the entrance music to political rallies. The suit was later settled out of court. Mitt Romney, it's the same year Sullivan also said that Mitt Romney, also a Republican candidate, should stop playing Eye of the Tiger of the campaign. Romney agreed to drop the song from the campaign's playlists. Mike Huckabee, Frank Sullivan's Rude Music Company filed a lawsuit in federal court in Chicago, Illinois in 2015 against former governor of Arkansas and Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee for using Eye of the Tiger at a political rally without permission. The rally took place when Kim Davis, a Kentucky county clerk, was released from jail after spending 5 days for refusing to issue a marriage license to a same-sex couple in Kentucky. Right. Well, that's good on Survivor.
You know,
I'm
enjoying this. Yeah, Survivor. Like, firstly, I love that they're willing to sue. That's what I'm enjoying about Survivor. But secondly, I do like that they're fighting the political fight because you can imagine that some of their fan base, some of the people who love Eye of the Tiger, would be people who absolutely might be at those, you know, political rallies for those sort of people. Like, you can absolutely get that. And the fact that they're willing to say, hey, don't do this is good, I think.
Well, it's Eye of the Tiger, and the other song that always seems to be getting played at, like, political rallies and is We're Not Going to Take It.
We're Not Going to Take It by Twisted Sister.
Yeah, which Dee Snider is like he's very anti-conservative and he hates it. He's constantly laying out lawsuits. And I think even the message of the song is a rebellion against, like, conservative values. Like, the irony is the song is actually a rallying cry against conservatism.
Have they never seen the film clip?
Yeah, right. Cross-dressing.
What are you going to do with your life, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
I want to rock.
If we had to have, like, if we were doing some kind of TOEFOP political rally, what are we coming out to?
Okay.
Theme songs aside, like anyone who's made music for the show in the past, theme songs, like something that sums up us.
Oh, yeah, okay. You mean like, yeah, so this is to set the mood. Like if the idea of like Rocky doing a training montage, the perfect music is, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Like it needs to be something that
yeah, I mean.
Oh, like, I mean, probably overly long and meandering, I'm thinking.
like a Brian Jonestown massacre, like one of their 14-minute songs.
Five songs, 14 minutes.
The Grateful Dead.
Three fights in the middle. some sort of fish jam.
Is it more of a hip-hop kind of flavor? Is there something kind of – I'm going to go see Wu-Tang this weekend, which will be a couple of weekends ago by the time people hear this.
Where are in the Brisbane, Wu-Tang?
Driving up to Brisbane to see
how many
Wu-Tang.
Do you know how many of the – the clan are in town for the gig?
No, I was actually going to message you because I'm not completely familiar with Wu-Tang Clan. I've been listening to a bit. I'm going with Sam. He's a big Wu-Tang fan, and so he got the organizer tickets. But I've been trying to – I was going to get the – find out what that documentary is called because I get confused by how many people there are on the Wu-Tang Clan.
If you go on to Stan, the streaming service Stan, there is – so much of Wu-Tang content on there for you. Like there is the like series, the fictionalized series around their life. There is the documentary of Mics and Men, I believe is the name of the documentary. They're all very good at helping you get some more clarity around who is. I'm just going to see if I can find. Oh, and Nas. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that'll be awesome. I can't believe that I – oh, this is how – okay, hang on.
What can I expect at a Wu-Tang? Like, am I going to stand
who,
out?
Who fucking knows?
Really?
Man, it's the best. It might be the greatest thing you've ever seen in your entire life or the worst thing that you've ever seen in your – well, no, that's probably not fair. Like, but it can be sometimes – pretty loose and pretty shambolic depending on who's decided to rock up and who's managed to make it through immigration with the various, you know, criminal offenses that they all have that make it hard to get a visa. And like then sometimes one of them just changes their mind when they get to the airport and decides not to get on the plane. And so I think I've only ever seen original lineup Wu-Tang once ever. Now let's see if they've got it. They're saying here who's out with them this time. Founded in New York, the Wu-Tang Clan is comprised of RZA, GZA, Method Man, Raekwon, Ghostface Killah, U-God, Master Killah, Inspector Get, Capadonna, and the deceased Old Dirty Bastard. Okay, that's old.
So how many is that? 10?
I think like, so basically what you'll learn is there's kind of an internal like whatever it is, 7 or whatever, and then it kind of – there's a broader
– right.
Like they've got a bench, an extended squad of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Super sub.
And then there's Young Dirty Bastard. I want to see who's on this tour. Like normally they might say who's actually on the tour, but it doesn't seem to give me a lineup. Which Wu-Tang members are touring Australia? Here we go. All right, good. Let's see.
Do you think the vintage of fan will be my age, or are the kids still into Wu-Tang Clan?
Both. Yeah. Okay. So I think there'll be heaps of people your age, and then there will be there'll be
kids
a next generation
paying respect.
As well.
Kids who pay respect to the originators.
Like, I mean, the music stands up. You know, it's got that real timeless quality, and it's had such an influence on, you know, what has come after it. And I think there's also through these documentaries and through, you know, these series and whatever, there's been a renewed interest in the story of the Wu-Tang Clan. I think you'll have a great time. Like I've seen them heaps, and most of it's been some of the best gigs I've ever been to, and then there was a couple of other ones.
I always find too, like now when I go to see like a gig, like, well, gig and concert's a different thing. Like this is a concert, but because Sam was like, do you want general admission? There's standing and there's general admission seating. And I'm like, can we get the seats? Like I just, knowing that it's going to be like a long show. And I just, the last time I went and stood at a concert for like 5 hours, I was in so much pain afterwards. That's why I'm like, what's the vintage of the crowd going to be? Because especially if like you know, they're super young and athletic. I don't need that rubbed in my face. But I think I will be in the seated area. Standing, sure. Like if people stand, I'm happy to stand. But I just need the option of being able to sit down these days.
I mean, in a way, it's okay because there's so many of them on stage. Like having a bit of a bird's eye view from somewhere probably isn't the worst idea. You'll probably get a really good sense of the show from there. And the other thing is, I think you'll find that there'll be more people who look like you than there will be, you know, young people would be my guess.
This is interesting when you go and see those old bands, those pioneering bands. Like I remember when I saw not the good version of Guns N' Roses, but when it was – Axel and band.
With Buckethead.
Yeah, that's right. You say Gerbil, you immediately think Richard Gere. You say shit Guns N' Roses, you say Buckethead. I mean, Buckethead. It's an unfortunate kind of association.
I mean, what a cultural influence for Buckethead though. Like, I mean, I don't remember a lot of people, but I absolutely remember Buckethead.
Is Buckethead the poor man's Wes Borland or is Wes Borland the poor man's Buckethead?
No,
I reckon both kind of goofy guitar. Well, guitarist for heavy bands that have goofy outfits.
I think Wes Borland, like Buckethead was in a better band, right? Yeah. But Wes Borland was.
I don't know. Was he? I mean, he was in a band that wrote better songs. I don't know that he was in a better band when he was playing with them because I saw Buckethead and
Well, that's what I guess that's what I mean is that GNR are a greater band than Limp Bizkit, right? That's what I'm going to say, right? Like just in general in the history of rock and roll music. But Wes Borland is like one of the integral members.
Iconic. He's an iconic guitarist.
As opposed to Buckethead, who's like...
Shit. Look, I know it's a bit late in the episode to do a... I'm going to just type in Buckethead into Wikipedia because what an enigma.
Buckethead came out. Yeah, he's just your replacement guy. Like, I mean, Buckethead could be the replacement for Wes Borland if Limp Bizkit got back together and Wes didn't want to tour. They'd call Buckethead.
Okay, so Buckethead is Brian Patrick Carroll, born in 1969, known professionally as Buckethead.
guitarist, known professionally as Buckethead.
A guitarist, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist. He's received critical acclaim for his innovative electric guitar playing.
Okay.
And spans several genres, including progressive metal, funk, blues, bluegrass, ambient, and avant-garde music.
It actually sounds like he's very impressive. So I reckon, like, don't call yourself Buckethead because it undervalues...
He performs primarily as a solo artist, although he has collaborated with artists such as Bill Laswell, Bootsy Collins, Bernie Worrell, Iggy Pop, Les Claypool, Serge Tankian, Bill Moseley, Mike Patton, Viggo Mortensen. I didn't know Viggo Mortensen played music. Blah, 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 bunch of people. He was also a member of Guns N' Roses from 2000 to 2004. He has recorded 435 studio albums.
So
it's a lot of albums.
Here's what we've discovered. Buckethead is one of the greatest artists of the modern times, and we've just been dismissing him as Buckethead for all this time.
435 studio albums, four special releases and one EP. He's performed.
Now, Charlie, question.
Yeah.
With Buckethead, if he's coming in to play on your studio album, like, you know, he's one of the greatest multi-instrumentalists there is, you're putting together an album, you're Viggo Mortensen, you're putting together your studio album and you've gone, you know what, I need the best. I need the best. I need a guy who's got, like, the track record, who's worked with some of the greatest artists of all time. That's who I need. Someone who's worked with Bootsy Collins and Mike Patton. This is the guy that I need.
Mm.
Does Buckethead wear the bucket into the studio?
The first
like
meeting.
When he... No, I mean at all times. Like, is Buckethead, like when he's in the studio making music, does he have the bucket on his head or is the bucket, because if he's known professionally as Buckethead, if he just rocks up to the studio and he's got no bucket on his head, are you really getting the full Buckethead experience?
Let's get into the Buckethead of it all. So also, just before we get into that, additionally, he's done music for movies, like a bunch of movies. Saw 2, Ghosts of Mars, Beverly Hills Ninja, Mortal Kombat 2, Last Action Hero. Like, he's done a lot.
Okay. Sorry, Buck. I'm sorry for writing you off so prematurely, Buckethead.
Well, we didn't write him off. We just identified a certain era of Guns N' Roses that he was a member of. Okay,
so I know, Buckethead- but when I say Buckethead and Guns N' Roses, what the implication is the shit era of Guns N' Roses, where it turns out that, like, Buckethead was there doing his best.
Buckethead's got to eat, mate. Buckethead had to pay his rent. Buckethead performs wearing a KFC bucket on his head. Emblazoned.
Oh, it is a KFC bucket?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, well, that's what it says in Wikipedia. And it's emblazoned with an orange bumper sticker that reads funeral in block letters and an expressionless plain white mask inspired by Michael Myers from the Halloween movies. At one point, he changed to a plain white bucket without a KFC logo, but subsequently reverted to his emblematic KFC bucket without a funeral sticker. He also incorporates a nunchuck and robot dancing in his stage performances.
I mean, that's a real mix, isn't it, by Buckethead?
But it does feel like Wes Borland, like, I don't know if they ever cross paths, but when you look at the photo, like, it's, I mean, Wes Borland puts a lot more into his costumes, but there's a definite kind of crossover. There's an influence of some kind. Whether or not one influenced the other, I don't know which way, but they're very similar. He's got long hair, though. He looks like Slash with a bucket. Maybe it is Slash with a bucket on his head. Wouldn't that be a plot twist? Buckethead was credited by Guitar World as ushering in a new era of virtuosity while ranking the release of his debut album, Bucketheadland. Which was ranked as the 45th greatest moment in electric guitar history. The magazine has also listed him amongst the 25 all-time weirdest guitarists and also one of the 50 fastest guitarists of all time. Okay, so we can skip his childhood, blah, blah, blah. He grew up in California. The Buckethead persona, it came
to be. That's what I wanted to know about.
When Carroll saw the 1988 horror movie Halloween 4 and was inspired by the film, he went right out after seeing it and bought a Michael Myers-like white mask. The bucket idea came later that night while eating chicken, and this is a quote from Buckethead.
The idea came when he ate a bucket of chicken and just thought, I might put this bucket on my head.
Boom, the legend was born. He says, I was eating it and I put the mask on and then I put the bucket on my head. I went to the mirror and I just said, Buckethead. That's Buckethead right there. It was just one of those things. And after that, I wanted to be that thing all the time.
Oh,
I
no. mean,
like – I don't know why I thought there might have been some complexity to the origins of Buckethead.
The Buckethead lore, exactly, the Buckethead backstory.
It's just exactly what you think.
You know,
it
my
is.
Parents found me on a doorstep in a bucket, and I grew up in that bucket. When I was a kid, I was afraid of buckets.
In 2017, Carroll gave a rare out-of-character interview discussing all ranges of his life, the Buckethead character, his parents' deaths, his health problems, and how he copes with overcoming fear. So maybe he was like, maybe he fell down a well and got hit on the head with a bucket.
A well full of buckets. He was down the bottom of the well and there was all these buckets that had been dropped. I mean, that if you were going to fall down a well, like one of the likely things that you would actually fall on is a bunch of buckets, right? Buckets fall down the bottom of wells. He's fallen into a well full of buckets, decided that he would fight crime as Buckethead, and then one day just going, you know what, maybe I'll just like, just learn how to play guitar.
Here's a great quote from Ozzy Osbourne. I tried out that Buckethead guy. I met with him and I asked him to work with me, but only if he got rid of that fucking bucket. So I came back a bit later and he's wearing this green fucking Martian hat thing. I said, look, just be yourself. He told me his name was Brian. So I said, that's what I'll call you. He says, no one calls me Brian except my mother. So I said, pretend I'm your mum then. I haven't even got out of the room and he's already playing fucking mind games with and I'm already playing mind games with this guy. What happens is one day he's gone and there's notes saying, hey, I've been beamed up to Mars. Don't get me wrong. He's a great player and he plays like a motherfucker, but he's a weirdo.
When Ozzy Osbourne's telling you that you're a weirdo.
All right. Well, let's get to the mailbag and then I reckon we can wrap things up. If you want to send us a message, you can go to tofop.com. There's a little contact menu. Just pick the podcast you want to get in touch with and you send us an email. And while you're there, you might as well check out some of our other great podcasts. We do one called Two Guys, One Cup, which comes out every Tuesday on the Listener app, and it's a lot like TOEFOP, just we sort of focus it around football. But I think even if you're not a footy fan, you'll enjoy it. We do another one called FOFOP, which is every Friday. It's TOEFOP with friends. Will and I take turns to chat with various people. Sometimes we're going to chat with people together. In fact, we've got something to talk about once we finish recording this episode. Will, we're going to have a production meeting. And Willosophy is back as well. All of that can be found at TOEFOP.com.
Yeah. That's true. A whole bunch of good new Willosophy episodes, a whole bunch of new and emerging comedians, a great Guy Williams episode, the Chris Ryan episode's getting a lot of cool feedback, but there's some really cool ones coming as well. So, yeah, go to the Willosophy feed, sign back up. And I have put a little note up on the Willosophy Patreon page to say that I'd recommend that everybody pop over to the TOEFOP Patreon page instead, because you can get all the TOEFOP bonus content that is there. And also we post the ad-free episodes of Willosophy up there on the TOEFOP Patreon page now as well. There are some people who have just gone, nah, I'm going to stay
well,
here.
I'll be right.
I'm right, thanks. I'm okay, I don't really thanks. Need that. I'm okay, thanks. But for everybody else, you can pop over to the TOEFOP Patreon.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's worth signing up for the TOEFOP Patreon because you're going to get all the podcasts ad-free. So if you're into Willosophy, FOFOP, whatever you're into, you'll get that there ad-free at patreon.com/TOEFOP plus a bunch of other great bonus stuff. We do a bonus TOEFOP every couple of weeks. In fact, I think there should be one from last week up there right now. Now, this Donut King thing just keeps rolling on. People are furious with us for claiming Donut King was dead because we sort of said, oh, it doesn't exist anymore. And people are like, you're absolutely wrong.
We didn't say it doesn't exist. We said it only exists in certain areas, it seemed to us, when we looked it up.
I think the implication is that you and I live behind the quinoa curtain because the king is with his people, alive and well. He's a man of the people in areas that we, because we were saying, oh, we don't know where East Gardens is. But I don't live in Sydney. I live in a semi-rural area. The Donut King's influence
has not. Yeah, but also when you live in Sydney, as everyone who lives in Sydney knows, you only ever go 15 kilometres from your own house.
Exactly. There was a Donut King in Bondi Junction, which is the closest shopping centre to me. And they ran him out of town. They replaced him with some other, like, I don't know, Boost Juice or something like that. It's disgraceful. Anyway, Andy's written in to say, hey, lads, just listening to your donut chat, and I can confirm there is a Donut King in full swing in Shopping World Plaza in Tamworth, New South Wales. He also said,
feels like it's thriving in the regions. Like, it doesn't well, – the not regions this region. And the outer suburbs.
Yeah, not for us. This is an interesting letter. This came in from Julie, and the subject is All Hail the Donut King. Hi, Will and Charlie. I don't think Charlie has ever spoken so passionately about anything as he waxed lyrical about the majesty of Donut King. Having grown up in suburban Sydney, it seemed they were everywhere, but I never had a chance to try one before they quietly disappeared. I've since moved to Queensland, and it so happened that I was in yet another suburban mall when a familiar scent of cinnamon wafted towards me. So I just had to see what the fuss was all about, which was how I ended up sitting alone in my car in a dimly lit underground car park at 10 a.m., furtively eating a Donut King donut like an addict. And, well, it was glorious. Not that I've ever doubted your culinary taste, but you were right on the money, and I am now ruined for cinnamon donuts forever. And that is the way to eat a Donut King donut, like
in shame.
Get the hot cinnamon in shame.
Hide it in a car park.
Like you just eat it in a car park where no one else can see, and just you do that Simpsons test where you just rub the donut on the paper bag, and once it goes, you can see
once
the window.
It becomes see through, it's ready to eat.
It's ready to eat. I'm still not entirely unconvinced that the whole donut bit wasn't a piece of viral marketing snuck in there, but if there's a sudden uptick in Donut King sales, you can take the credit. I mean, that is a good. Mike the Third, can we get onto that? Can you just send Donut King an email and just say, "Look,
well, they don't need to now. We've done all the hard work for them for
we'll
free.
Do more though. We'll get some contra." Anyway, I'm not sure if this question has been asked before, but have either of you ever had to do an ad that you're not particularly proud of, either because you felt morally opposed to it or it was just kind of daggy or cringy? Well, we have exclusions in our contract, so we sort of say up front that we don't want to do, you know, there's certain things we don't want to endorse. So I don't think we
draw our lines in, you know, our own places for there are brands and companies that we don't advertise. And look, I mean, advertising by its very nature can sometimes like feel a bit weird or like dag. I'm sure there've been, you know, things that we've said or the, you know, like we've laughed at the time to go, this is a funny way of, you know, us saying this, or, you know, when a company's wanted us to say something a specific way.
Cut out the middleman, for instance.
but yeah, most of the time the products that we have on the podcast as ads, we either at the very least endorse, or sometimes we're just, you know, that we're fine with, you know, it's one of those things where we're happy for them to advertise on the show.
I mean, as an actor, I've appeared in a bunch of ads that I'd never want to see again, but then like your agent tells you how much they're going to pay you and you're like, I guess I can do that.
This is my job, I guess. Yeah, this is literally the way that I earn my living. So I suppose my morals aren't going to pay my bills.
I haven't done an ad in like a TV ad in so long. I think the last one I did was for the Royal Melbourne Show, and it actually came via TOEFOP. It was a listener to TOEFOP who reached out to my agent, and it was just an offer. And so I went and did this ad, and I remember like there's a thing they do in certain, like when you do voiceovers and stuff, certain ad reads where they want it up. Like more energy, happier, just more energy. I've just been doing my voiceovers for my Getaway episodes, and the notes was always, can you just be more up, more up? And there's a certain point where you're like, I don't know, I feel like I've hit the ceiling of up. I don't know how more up I can go without sounding hysterical. And that was the case with this Royal Melbourne Show ad where I was just like, and don't forget this rides and blah, 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 and the kids will have fun. And the director's like, more. And I'm like, I'm going to be like manic screaming at the camera, borderline.
Don't you
like,
dare forget that there are show bags for the children.
It was my Joker moment. It's just like,
they're like, perfect. How, yeah. You just send that through. They're like,
can you just dance down these stairs while smoking a cigarette? A little side note, Julie just happens to be a healthcare professional. She's a mental health nurse.
Yeah.
Fantastic. This is from John. So you might remember Steph. We had a girl write in last week, Steph, who was a winemaker, and she said the only other person she chats to about TOEFOP is also a winemaker, and then they – no, in TOEFOP 12, we had a winemaker, right? And so I was wondering if that was like another subsection. So it turns out the winemaker Steph was referring to is John. So he's written in to say, many thanks to the pod. I am the other winemaker that Steph was referring to when she wrote in last week. So yes, there are at least two winemakers listening to you. I have a question. How do you both feel about receiving gifts? I ask this because I've been listening from the start, and way back near the start of pre-Patreon, I felt like I owed you something for listening to the pod. So I sent you some wine. Does this ring a bell, or did your management keep it for themselves? It doesn't ring a bell. We occasionally get gifts, like, you know, well, generally with sponsors, they'll send you the product so you can try it before we talk about it. I don't remember getting wine, but I don't think our management would have snaffled it because our management both tend to stay out of this.
they probably would have seen something addressed to TOEFOP and thrown it in the bin, assuming it was like a giant dead box rat of semen.
Used condoms, Jared Leto. Jared Leto style.
Yeah, totally. So, apologies if you did send us something and we didn't receive it or didn't get back to you. I don't remember us getting wine from the podcast at any stage.
We don't have a post box. No. We used to have a postal address, and from time to time.
I personally don't really have a postal address at the moment because I am just all over the place, and to the point where my credit card company keeps telling me they've sent me a credit card that I cannot locate. So hopefully someone else doesn't just have that credit card and is out in the world.
I think they do. Have you seen Emily the Criminal? That's a boom industry. Would you like people to send you gifts as long as they pass the cool things for cool people test? Look, we don't have a postal address. So we appreciate the sentiment, but I think if you want to support us, the best way to do that is Patreon. If you want to show your appreciation for the show, go to Patreon or go to Redbubble and buy some merch. Get something in return. Help Foz out. I've spent many hours on the track that laughing to myself out loud listening to you guys. I really appreciate the hours of content. It's opened my mind about things I probably was closed-minded about in the past, mainly around sexuality, gender roles, religion, and acceptance of people who are different to me. So many thanks, John. And he closes with a great tagline. You know how Steph wanted one? Mm-hmm. So he says, "You keep me thinking, so I keep him
drinking."
Correct. It's a good one, right?
Yep. Good. I like it.
All right. Final bit of mail here from Sam. What is this about? Let me. Okay. Oh, yeah. Cool. All right. I've been labeling the letters because I used to read them blind and then would get halfway through and realize, like, you know, it wasn't a funny topic.
But, or you'd read it before.
I've read it before. Yeah, exactly. Hey, guys. I've been listening back as suggested and I've made it to episode 343 where I was surprised to hear the words stop, collaborate and listen.
He went like this. They're completely different songs. And he went, like, the Queen one is dun 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 dun. And Ice Ice Baby is like dun 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 dun. And you were like, that's exactly the same thing that you just said. 7 years later, the song with the famous line, stop, collaborate and listen, made him a millionaire before his 21st birthday.
I was surprised to hear Will saying this and its relevance to Vanilla Ice, as I was forced to use this phrase while working for a touring school company teaching kids stop animation, which is a horror show in itself. Traveling from school to school, we were told to get the kids' attention by shouting stop, collaborate and listen. And it brings me an absurd amount of happiness to know that this is somehow also a Vanilla Ice lyric. Now, Sam, I don't want to blow your mind. I mean, you're not wrong. You're thinking what I'm thinking, right? Like,
I'm 100% thinking what you're thinking is that's the reason they were saying that, Sam. They were quoting. It's not,
yes. The phrase comes from Vanilla Ice. It's not this like is, it. Stop, collaborate, and listen is a famous saying that Vanilla Ice appropriated for Ice Ice Baby.
This is my favorite. I've spoken about this on Fofop before, but there was a joke in my last show, Logical, which is available on ABC iView. I'd love if you would check it out. But that references an old joke, like the great clown Pagliacci, right? Like, you know, and the amount of people when we posted that online who think that they're like, oh, this is that joke from like that thing that he's ripped off. And you're like, yes.
Yes.
Like that's that is the, yes, that is
that
the
is the point of
that's
the joke.
The joke. Yeah. That's like 100% the joke.
Everything about that job is ridiculous and it makes it so much better finding this out after not working there anymore. I genuinely had to do a double take and rewind the pod to double check I'd heard it correctly. What I love about that is Sam thinks that you saying it was like a mind-blowing. Little did she know that Vanilla Ice was probably the biggest song of 1992 or 1993. Like, honestly, when someone just yells out stop, you immediately follow up with collaborate and listen.
Ice is back with a brand new edition, something. Grab the hold of me tightly.
Will it ever stop? I don't know.
Turn off the lights. And I will glow.
And I'll glow.
To the extreme, I rock the mic like a vandal.
Like a vandal.
On the stage. Watch me jump like a candle.
Okay. That'll do for Tofop this week. We've done all our plugs. Do you have anything else?
I'm on tour. Depending on when you're hearing this, comedy.com.au, but come and see me do some standing up comedy. That would be fun. And there's some other fun live stuff that I have coming up later in the year as well that I'm in talks about. So just, yeah, comedy.com.au for all my touring details.
And just one last thing before we go. A lot of people have been confused. Lately, we've had a couple of technical issues and I've been saying to Mike the Third, hey, man, like if we have like a dropout or any kind of technical issues, we sometimes play hold music, elevator music, but feel free to fill in whatever you want in there. And I haven't been listening back, but I'd started to notice a few comments online. And so what Mike has been doing is been using those little interludes to play some acoustic guitar. He's been rocking out What If God Was One of Us, Don't Speak by No Doubt. So if anyone is confused, it's because Mike Third has licensed to get creative in any technical dropouts, because there were some very baffled questions a couple of weeks ago. They were like, what was that? There's suddenly like a musical interlude halfway through the episode. Hey, that's why we only employ mics on this show.
I'm
Charlie Clausen.
I'm Will Anderson.
How long? Not long. listener.